against each other, with both sides reporting casualties and damage to the buildings. Hello and welcome, everybody. 5 months into the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip, the regime is pushing ahead with its deadly onslaught on the territory, even during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 70 more people are killed and about 110 others injured in Israeli attacks since Wednesday afternoon. Israeli forces once again opened fire on aid seekers in northern Gaza, killing at least six and wounding scores of others. The attack came hours after the regime's warplanes bombed an UNRWA aid distribution center in the southern city of Rafah, leaving at least five people dead. Separately, two civilians were killed and some others injured after their vehicle was targeted in Rafah. More than 31,340 Palestinians have been killed since the war began in early October. Most of those killed are women and children. Over 73,000 Gazans have also been injured. The U.S.-Israeli campaign of killing and destruction against Gaza continues adding miseries to Palestinians. Even during the holy month of Ramadan, people in aid-starved Gaza are forced to break their fast in the rubble of their destroyed homes.
Last Ramadan was great, but this year it isn't. A lot of things are not there anymore. My sisters, my family, our house got destroyed. There are still people under the rubble, and you're still not pulled out. This house was the children's dream. Their toys and everything is lost. There is nothing that we can offer to the children, no food or meat, or anything that they need. We only eat soup and canned food, a can of beans. We are tired of canned food, and we get sick because of it. My son keeps telling me that his stomach is hurting him because of canned food. We have canned meat that even cats cannot eat. There is no place that I can go to. There is no shelter, no school. There are many diseases that are spreading in schools. And I was worried about my children, so I said we come back here to the house where I used to live and where I had a dream, and where my children also had a dream, but it became a rubble.
Last Ramadan, I had all my neighbors and loved ones over. We used to sit and spend nights together. But this year, there are no neighbors or loved ones. They're not here anymore. It's only me and the children left, sitting here, and we don't know what will happen to us.
A vessel loaded with food aid is gradually heading toward Gaza amid growing calls to deal with dire humanitarian conditions in the besieged Palestinian Strip. The vessel sent by a Spanish NGO is towing a barge with 200 tons of food aid. It set sail from a port in Cyprus on Tuesday. Meanwhile, Cypriot foreign minister said a second aid ship with bigger capacity is being prepared in Larnaca port. Israel's bombardment and ground offensive has reduced much of Gaza's infrastructure to rubble. The onslaught continues unabated. On Wednesday, the main UN aid agency in Gaza said an Israeli strike hit one of its warehouses in the southern city of Rafah, killing at least one staff member. The dire food shortages causing malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza have already claimed 27 lives, most of them women and children. International aid agencies say the current aid entry cannot address the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza. We were earlier joined by journalist and activist Khaled Barakat, who shared with us his perspectives on a Gaza-bound humanitarian aid ship.
Well, the problem with these initiatives is that it comes as a replacement of ending the siege and opening the crossings, which is what the Palestinians want. They want to see Rafah crossing, Kerem Abu Salem, and other crossing open. There are thousands and thousands of trucks full of aid and waiting to enter, but Israel is refusing to do that. And at the same time, the Europeans, the Americans, and some of even NGOs are complicit in this. They want to show that we can starve you to death, and at the same time, they want to keep Palestinians, in need of aid. And today, for example, the United Nations have met with Palestinian heads of tribes in Gaza, and they have listened to a unanimous united Palestinian positions, that people in Gaza support the resistance. Any aid that comes to Gaza has to be in coordination with the Palestinian resistance. And on the ground, I mean, if the resistance doesn't want any of these vessels to enter Gaza, they are able to do so. But the resistance has been very careful in terms of looking at these initiatives. They are being also very realistic because they understand that people have reached in reality a starvation. I mean, people are dying of starvation. And this is because of U.S. position. United States is responsible for starving the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Israeli forces have carried out new raids on several cities and towns across the occupied West Bank. A number of Palestinians were abducted from Ariha, where Israeli military had blocked all entrances with heavy troop deployment before raiding the city and two refugee camps there. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to give us more details.
Unfortunately, Israeli forces are raiding Palestinian areas day and night. At this time, the Israeli forces stormed the refugee camps of Ain al-Sultan and Aqab al-Jabr in Ariha, and they arrested at least four Palestinians from the area. And up till the moment, the Israeli military is sending more soldiers to deploy at the entrances of the city of Ariha. It's not clear why, because when the Israelis started their genocide on the Gaza Strip, the city of Ariha and the refugee camps had been completely closed for several weeks, and Palestinians were not able to enter or to leave the city and its refugee camps. It's not clear why the Israeli military is sending more soldiers to deploy at the entrances of the city. However, the operation is still going on in Ain al-Sultan refugee camp in Ariha. In Kalandia refugee camp, the Israeli forces stormed the outskirts of the refugee camp, and there have been reports of exchange of fire between Palestinians and Israeli forces that continued for at least 2 hours at midnight. And the same thing happened. Israeli military sent more reinforcements around the refugee camp of Kalandia. We have to mention that the refugee camp of Kalandia is located to the south of Ramallah city, and at the same time it's adjacent to the Israeli military checkpoint of Kalandia that Palestinians usually use in order to enter Al-Quds.
Russia has reported one death in a cross-border drone attack from Ukraine as the war between the two neighbors is now in its third year. Local officials in Russia's Belgorod region said three civilians were also wounded in a strike that hit a car. According to the Russian Defense Ministry, 14 Ukrainian drones were destroyed overnight over Belgorod and Kursk regions along the border with Ukraine. Russian installed officials at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant also reported Ukrainian shelling of the complex. Meanwhile, Russia launched three dozen drones across several Ukrainian regions. Ukraine's military said it shot down 22 of 36 drones. There were no immediate reports of casualties, but local Ukrainian officials. Well, the joint naval drills between Iran, China, and Russia are still underway in the Iranian territorial waters in the north of the Sea of Oman. We're now joined by our correspondent, Mahdi Abbasian, who's with us from the southeastern city of Konarak for more details. Mahdi, what do you have to share with us about the significance of these trilateral drills?
Well, Bardi, actually, the fifth edition of the Maritime Security Belt exercises have just come to an end officially. Minutes ago, the spokesman of the drills, Rear Admiral Tajed Dini, published a statement and stated that after conducting several different operations today with the presence of the Iranian Navy, the IRGC Navy, the Russian and Chinese vessels, the drills have come to an end today. Actually, it's better to say since last night, the last time that we had a live from Konarak, there were different operations. It was shooting at night, and then They practice rescue operations, rescuing captives in a ship stolen by pirates, as well as extinguishing a ship that is under fire, and various other, let's say, operations that are all aimed at building more synergy and cooperation between the naval vessels and the navies of Iran, China, and Russia to provide peace and security in the region. The final phase of the exercises were that today all the vessels went to the Indian Ocean and conducted a march. The Iranian warship Jamoran headed the team, and all the vessels passed by it in a show of respect and to show that it's the end of the exercise. Now, the thing is, during these days that the drills have been happening, Iranian commanders as well as Russian and Chinese commanders have all underlined the importance of this drill, saying that it's a perfect opportunity for the navies of the three countries, as I said, to build more synergy, to cooperate more for, further cooperation. The other thing I have to note is that this is not the last year that Iran, China, and Russia are conducting this naval drill. This particular naval drill, codenamed Maritime Security Belt, is now in the calendar of the navies of the three countries, which means that annually all of them are committed to participating in this particular drill. So the other thing I have to highlight is the open call. The Iranian Navy commander, Rear Admiral Shahram Irani, last night said that all regional countries are welcome, most welcome, to take part in the drills in the coming years, as Iran sees the regional countries as the true, as truly the ones that are responsible for providing peace and security for the region.
Thanks a lot, Matti Abbasian, joining us from Quinadic in southeastern Iran. Moving on, Italy's judicial authorities are considering the extradition of a Palestinian man who was arrested without charges over a month ago on a request of Israel. 5 weeks after his detention, the man is now being charged with alleged terrorist plans. Israel's extradition request is now being examined by an Italian court. Max Civili reports from Rome.
Anan Yaesh is a 37-year-old Palestinian citizen from Tulkarm in the occupied West Bank and a former member of the Palestinian resistance movements. During the Second Palestinian Intifada in 2006, Anan, who was just a teenager, served a 4-year sentence in Israeli jails as a political prisoner. Anan holds a valid Italian resident permit for special protection since 2017. Anan Yaesh was arrested without charge by the Italian police on January 29 on an extradition request by the Israeli regime, which Italy's Justice Ministry acquiesced straight away. Weeks following Anan's arrest on March 11, he's now being charged with terrorism, accused of being part of a terrorist cell that was allegedly planning attacks on Israeli civilian and military targets. Italian investigators have used elements provided by Tel Aviv to charge Anan and two other Palestinians of allegedly belonging to an operational military structure called the Rapid Response Group, which they claim to be linked to the Al-Aqsa Brigade.
There are countries like Italy that are totally subservient to the US and its allies. This results in our authorities absurdly arresting Anan for being servile to Israel, a favor done to a prepotent ally. You think the public will ever know about the details of Anan's arrest?
On Tuesday, Israel's extradition request for Anan was being examined by a court in L'Aquila in central Italy, where the man was arrested in late January. The court is expected to rule on Anan's case soon.
We have appealed to the court not to extradite Anan, mainly on two grounds. Firstly, due to the systematic nature of torture and the ill treatment of Palestinians convicted or awaiting trial in Israeli prison, Anan Yaesh would risk being tortured if extradited. Secondly, while Israeli citizens are subject to Israeli civil and criminal law, Palestinians are subject to a military court system.
Anan Yesh's lawyer, Flavio Albertini, also argued that the charges against his client and the other two Palestinians were politically motivated, referencing Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's staunch support of the Israeli regime. Max Civili, Rome.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hidden Files. The scientist gave no mind to security warnings that fateful day. He had to return from his vacation to teach a class the next day and wasn't going to let anyone stand in his way. After 14 years of high security, perhaps he was just ready to face his fate. Whatever it was, he hit the road and not long afterwards, the news was blasted everywhere in the country. Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the father of Iran's nuclear science, had joined his martyred colleagues assassinated by the Israeli regime. But just who was Dr. Fakhrizadeh? And what had he done to deserve the honor of martyrdom? And why did the U.S. and Israeli regimes plan this assassination and more in hopes of dismantling Iran's nuclear program? Well, my dear colleague Mariam Azadeh is joining us with a bit of history on this topic. Mariam, please tell us more about Dr. Fakhrizadeh.
Well, thank you, Marzia, and greetings to your audience. Now, over the years, the authorities of the Islamic Republic have declared time and time again that the country's nuclear program is merely for peaceful purposes. Iran signed the Treaty of the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons in 1970, and careful investigations and reports by the International Atomic Energy Agency have shown the Islamic Republic's compliance with the treaty over the years. Even more reassuring than the treaty and the IAEA reports is the clear and strict stance of Islam that is the very foundation of the Islamic Republic. Even at the height of Saddam's invasion of Iran, when the Ba'athist regime in Iraq was bombing Iranian cities with chemical weapons, the late leader of the revolution, Imam Khomeini, declared that it's forbidden for the Iranian military to respond in kind. He himself prevented the production of chemical weapons on the grounds that Islam does not permit using weapons of mass destruction aimed to inflict harm on civilians. then there's the verdict issued by the current leader of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khamenei, that reaffirms that the use of WMDs using chemical weapons and nuclear weapons is strictly forbidden in Islam. And yet the U.S., with well over 5,000 nuclear warheads, and the Israeli regime, with some 400 nuclear warheads, have committed countless crimes to stop Iran's peaceful nuclear program. But it seems that these crimes have only made Iranians more determined in their pursuit of nuclear technology.
I'm very happy to welcome to Hidden Files two of the sons of Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. We have Dr. Mehdi Fakhrizadeh and Dr. Hamid Fakhrizadeh. Welcome to the program. I'd like to start off with, of course, a very difficult time, the day that your father was assassinated. How did you find out about it?
In the name of the compassionate and merciful God, it was around 2:20 p.m. on November 27, 2020, when my mother called me and altered a sentence that echoed in our minds for 20 years. In that phone call, she simply said to me, "Mehdi, they've shot Dad," a three-word sentence I'd been waiting to hear every day for two decades. At the time of the call, the sounds of explosions and chaos were audible because my mother was the only one with my father. When I inquired about the location of the incident, I learned that the incident had occurred in Absard County. Immediately, we coordinated with my brothers and reached the site. When they had transported my father to Absard facility for initial treatments, we arrived and later, he was airlifted to a hospital in Tehran.
It's so difficult. I can't imagine. And your brother said you were waiting for this for 20 years. What does that mean? What is that like to be waiting to see if your father is going to be killed, become a martyr or not? What does it mean?
As my brother Mehdi mentioned, particularly in the last 15 to 20 years, life had been challenging for us. Despite my father's efforts to prevent security issues and pressures from affecting the family, the created security conditions had entangled the entire family. Nevertheless, he never abandoned his efforts to achieve his goals, which were nothing but the elevation and empowerment of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the country. The first attempt on his life dates back 20 years before his martyrdom, and during these two decades, there were four unsuccessful terrorist operations against him. In a video, Olmert speaks and says, "We wanted to assassinate Fakhrizadeh."
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
And when the reporter asks how well he knows Fakhrizadeh, he replies, "I know him well enough that if I see him in a crowded street, I can easily recognize him."
Well, what about you guys? I mean, did you ever say, "Okay, it's enough. It's too much pressure"?
No, fortunately not. Anyway, a part of these tireless efforts, or as Iran's leader calls them, enduring efforts, belongs to our adolescence or a part of our childhood, which we understood to some extent. But our effort was one of our goals, and we are thankful that we were with him in understanding through mutual understanding, companionship, and solidarity.
You said pressure on you and also your children before and still.
Yes.
What kind of pressure right now? What are we talking about right now?
In two or three segments, we can define the pressure on the family. The first segment was before my father was introduced and recognized, meaning the time when he was on the hit list, and attempts were made to assassinate him. Incidents had occurred, but intelligence and security services and the Zionist regime had not yet introduced him to the public. These pressures were internal and stemmed from concerns, anxieties, and potential losses. The second segment was when the intelligence services began to introduce him. meaning becoming recognized by the people. When it became known to the public, we too involuntarily became known, meaning we had to answer various questions. In many instances, we denied our relationship to inter-various fields, but in some cases we couldn't deny it, and various kinds of damage were inflicted upon us. For example, one aspect that was not important to us, but turned out to be a positive outcome, was that many individuals in the business sector cut off their professional ties with us due to concerns that their business connections with us might lead to their sanctions. This was a part of the pressure at the time. After the martyrdom, some of the past pressures lingered, and new pressures were added. I want to mention a small emotional aspect, the loss of a prominent figure, which apart from being a prominent figure in the world and national arena, we have significant effects. We heard that during his lifetime, he was recognized by Foreign Policy magazine as one of 500 powerful figures globally. In any case, the world recognized him as someone who had accomplished significant events. This recognition of his personality also existed within the family. Nevertheless, when this powerful pillar is removed, everyone, relative to the depth of the relationship they had with him, is affected. An example is a question my youngest child, who was only 2 years and a few months old at the time of his martyrdom, still asks me, when will we become martyrs and join Grandpa? I emphasize that the discussion is not merely about his removal or exclusion from the nuclear issue. Of course, the majority of the issue was related to nuclear matters because it was a highly sensitive and a strategic matter for Iran. For Iran's enemies, a country like Iran being equipped with nuclear knowledge independently and without the need for another country with the long-standing sanctions was an unacceptable issue that they could not tolerate.
Okay, let me leave it right there because I'm going to ask a question a little bit later about that particularly. Okay. But you had mentioned about his personality. I want to talk a little bit about who he was as far as a father in the house, just his personality in general, hobbies. Tell me about your father.
It can be said that he had a multidimensional personality. When we look at the personal dimensions, we see he was a poet and a literary individual with a strong interest in literature and involvement in literary matters. In another dimension, when we look at his personality, we see that in the field of philosophy, he had his own opinions and thoughts. His entry into the realm of philosophy dates back to his 16 years of age when he became interested in philosophical subjects. Prominent philosophy professors acknowledged that when he came to the Sadr Philosophy Institute, he raised questions and had answers to those questions that did not even cross their minds. These subjects were not discussed in either the religious or university context, let alone providing answers to them. In the field of management, when you look at him, he managed a complex set of operations in 16 different areas. This involved working with hundreds of scientists and achieving results. One of his oldest colleagues and friends mentioned that Fakhrizadeh did nothing during his 30 years of service unless it was the first time in the country or the world.
What an amazing life that he had. With your father, you said that you had been waiting for that news for 20 years. What would he say to you all? Because obviously he knew that he was a target. What would he tell you about the possibility of him being martyred?
At various times, events occurred, and some of them we became aware of unintentionally, while others needed to be brought to our attention. So he did. Of the four or five instances of assassination attempts that happened to him, perhaps we became aware of one of them after his martyrdom, but we were involved in three or four of them during his lifetime. This was because we also had to be prepared for such events. Preparations had various aspects, and we had to be prepared for after his passing. Perhaps the paternal recommendations or last-minute advices are one of the interesting aspects of such events. Sometimes an individual may give advice once, but for us, within 20 years, we're always involved in these events, as if a person, if their death is destined to happen, experiences it once in a sickness or deathbed, but it was on the brink of such events every day. Therefore, for us, every day was a final day, and he had last-minute recommendations for us every day.
Amazing.
Amazing. When did you find out about the type of projects that your father was involved in, or did you find out, did you know the importance of his work?
I have said this in several places. Just as much as my father was unknown to the people in work-related matters, he was also unknown to us. He was never in a situation to talk about projects or the work he was doing and achieving results at home. Even after 3 years, I still hear things about his work and projects that are new to me. Naturally, more than 90% of the activities carried out by Martir Fakhrizadeh or are currently ongoing are not open for discussion because they are confidential.
Absolutely amazing life. Let me ask you, Mehdi, did you ever think maybe we shouldn't just insist on nuclear technology? For example, the Islamic Republic of Iran, of course, we know that there have been, you've mentioned, several nuclear scientists who have been martyred. We know the Islamic Republic has advanced technologies in various fields, from nano to stem cell technologies and others. What would you say, I mean, if Iran just gave up on its peaceful nuclear program? Why not?
There are two discussions or two dimensions here. One is the discussion of nuclear energy, the discussion of nuclear technology and nuclear knowledge. We're not only talking about nuclear energy. We're talking about nuclear technology and knowledge. Today, everyone knows that it has various applications and is among the fundamental and foundational sciences. It has diverse applications and is strategic for the country. Therefore, the country must focus on the development of nuclear science, even though it has been repeatedly emphasized, mentioned, and even examined that Iran's nuclear program is a peaceful program. Unlike many other countries, where their primary use of nuclear technology is for military purposes and violates human rights, Iran has a peaceful program. Today, good information is provided that exploitation must take place in various fields, including agriculture. Iran, like other countries, cannot and should not be deprived of using this knowledge and technology to secure the interests of its people and the residents of its cities. The second issue here is that knowledge, especially cutting-edge technologies, is empowering. Empowerment has various aspects, with the most significant being independence for powerful countries. These countries strongly resist dependence and do not want other countries to become independent. They always prefer to be in need and are inclined to maintain dependencies, reaching out to other countries.
Right. Well, your father wasn't the first scientist, as I just said, to be assassinated. And it was by the American and Israeli, of course, regimes. And these assassinations were not only to slow down, to halt the progress of individual projects, but also to send a message to others not to go into that field, not to do that. Do you think that they have been effective in sending that message to others or not?
دقیقاً روز بعد از شهادت یعنی شنبه صبح بود
Perhaps it was the morning after his martyrdom, a Saturday morning, when I explicitly, in the first interview I had with some television networks, wholeheartedly stated the following sentence: an arrogant regime such as Israel should fear the martyred Mohsen Fakhrizadeh as much as it feared him alive. This is a reality, at least in the events after the martyrdom, where in fact when we complete the puzzle of the assassinations, we come to two points. Firstly, they are genuinely still afraid of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, and now they fear him even more. Secondly, the very subtle message of the supreme leader regarding his actions and activities, illustrating how impactful one can be not only within the geographical boundaries of their own country, but far beyond. One could boldly say that he was not just an Iranian scientist, but one of the greatest scientists of his time in the Islamic world. This is an undeniable fact. Some of the work he did was closely tied to his personality, knowledge, and capabilities. Naturally, after his martyrdom, these tasks cannot continue, or if they do, they may continue with less power or force. In certain areas, given his high managerial abilities, his work on succession planning and establishing suitable structures or projects and other matters would not necessarily come to a complete halt with his martyrdom. We certainly hope that, following the explicit orders of the leadership, all his scientific and technical activities in all areas he was involved in will continue. I would like to mention a point related to this matter which may be relevant to your question. At the beginning of the message announced by the supreme leader the day after the martyrdom of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, he states, an outstanding and distinguished nuclear and defense scientist. But where he wanted to say, go and carry out his work, he did not say, go and carry out his nuclear work or go and carry out his defense work, because the supreme leader knew perfectly well in which areas he was capable. Where he wanted to give orders for his activities, he used the phrase go and pursue his work seriously. Let the officials follow up on all his scientific and technical work in all areas he was engaged in. We hope that following this strict order of the supreme leader, the work will proceed well. I have said this many times. Iran has shown that the youth within its borders are all capable and worthy. This soil has nurtured Soleimani. This soil has nurtured Fakhrizadeh. This soil will never be devoid of individuals like Fakhrizadeh, and God willing, the work will proceed smoothly.
Do you have any final comments? I mean, if we look at the overall situation of the Islamic Republic of Iran now and technology, are you optimistic about the future of Iran?
Exactly. In any case, over the past 40 years, we have demonstrated that we can open the greatest peaks of knowledge and technology in various fields from within ourselves and relying on our own capabilities. This includes nuclear technology, nanotechnology, stem cells, computer science, and today, in artificial intelligence and more. We have international documentation, scientific articles published by Iranian youth in emerging fields demonstrate that Iran is highly capable and performs well. We have witnessed significant growth and advancements, and we envision a bright future for our country. In the end, the point I want to make is that the assassination of Martyr Fakhrizadeh and those like them is a blow not only to Iran or the Islamic world, but to human society. We lost a scientist, and they assassinated a scientist who was engaged in fundamental and foundational activities in the field of science, contributing to the beneficial development of human society. These assassinations occur to achieve malicious goals that certain groups have, not for the sake of human society or even for a specific nation. I emphasize that these assassinations occur for the sake of goals that certain groups have. Hopefully, the global community will wake up to this awareness and we will witness the confrontation with such behaviors, the result of which is a violation of the human rights of different nations and a gross violation of human rights in general.
Yes, we hope so. Thank you both for being with me, Dr. Mehdi and Dr. Hamid Fakhrizadeh. I appreciate you being with me.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back with more of the program. And thank you, viewers, for staying with us. Don't go away. There's more to the show. Stay tuned.
Now, some may ask, with so much pressure on Iran to stop its peaceful nuclear program, with all these sanctions and the sabotage of Iran's nuclear facilities and the assassination of Iran scientists and more, why doesn't the Islamic Republic just give up on its nuclear program? So let's go over a few reasons. Now, one of the major uses of nuclear energy is in the production of electricity. France, for instance, gets 70% of its electricity from nuclear energy. Now, for Iran, a country with a dry climate, using nuclear energy instead of hydropower plants is ideal, and it's dedicated at least 5 nuclear power plants to the production of electricity. This technology has many uses in the agricultural industry, from genetic modification to pest control using sterilization to water usage control and much more. Now, these are just some of the reasons that the Islamic Republic insists on making use of nuclear technology like other countries, and it has the right to do so. But it's not really about nuclear energy. Over the years, many sanctions have been placed on various other types of technology in Iran as well. The main goal is to keep the Islamic Republic of Iran from progressing, a goal that has clearly failed.
Fakhrizadeh, the Iranian nuclear physicist, vaccine developer, university professor, and more, is no longer amongst us. Now he's reached his dreams of martyrdom while fulfilling what he deemed the holy mission of working to advance his country and serving his people, the dream of giving everything he had for the worthiest cause he knew. Now, today, the same criminal entity that took the life of Fakhrizadeh continues to commit a genocide in Palestine. The same entity that accused the Islamic Republic of Iran of reaching for nuclear bombs has dropped over 40,000 tons of explosives on the Gaza Strip alone, breaking the record of American nuclear bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in death and destruction. But just as the mass murder of Palestinians has not stopped their resistance against Israeli occupation, the assassination of Iranian scientists has only made Iranians more determined to advance their country through their peaceful nuclear program. Well, Iran has certainly lost a few heroes, but the Israeli regime has lost face to millions of people who are taking to the streets to denounce its crimes across the world. And it's just as Imam Khomeini, the late leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, had said, "Go ahead and murder us. It will only awaken the masses."
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. We are talking about helping our brothers and sisters in faith. In the previous episodes, we spoke about giving them financial support, because we said there are three things we need to give to them: financial support, mental support, and emotional support. Today we want to talk about mental support. Sometimes my brother and sister in faith, they are not in need of money. Alhamdulillah, they are very well off. They have all the required financials from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But sometimes they just need someone to talk to. They need someone to express their pains and suffering to. Sometimes they might just want to seek advice from you, to share whatever in their minds with you. To them, this means the world. And to us as a human being, sometimes this is all we need. We just want someone to hear us out. So I might be financially well off, but it doesn't mean I'm happy. It doesn't mean, for example, I'm happy with my spouse, I'm happy with my children, I'm happy with my coworkers, I'm happy in life in general. I have concerns. I want to speak to somebody. I want to feel good about myself. I want to, you know, get it out of my chest. Even Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, it was said that he would go to the desert and he would put his head in the ground or in the well, in the bi'r. And then he would speak and he would let things out of his chest. Or sometimes he goes with his companions like Kumail ibn Ziyad, and he would take him outside, or Abu Dharr and Ammar, and he expresses whatever in his heart with them. So a mu'min sometimes needs another mu'min just to listen to. And for example, when it comes to the believers themselves, they, in terms of education, in terms of knowledge, obviously they differ. So sometimes we need to go to the people that we can and we find them worthy of talking to. A hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, اتقوا الله, fear Allah, وكونوا إخوانا بررا, and be nice and kind and gentle brothers to one another, متحابين في الله, that you love one another for the sake of Allah, متواصلين, that you keep your connection with one another, متراحمين, having mercy with one another, تزاوروا, visit one another, وتلاقوا, meet one another, وتذاكروا, and talk to one another, and talk about our affairs and bring it to life. So the Imam saying, if you guys get together, meet and visit and, you know, have mercy and love and compassion towards one another and sit together and talk about us, this is a form of giving each other that mental support that is required. And when it comes to, for example, accepting the nasiha of one another, the advice of one another, he says, the Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says in his trust to his son Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, he says to him, أَمْحَضْ أَخَاكَ النَّصِيحَ, give him the best of your advice, حَسَنَةً كَانْتٍ أَوْ قَبِيحَ وَسَاعَتُ عَلَى كُلِّ حَالٍ, whether he finds this nasiha to be good or bad, just give it to him and help him in any situation. This is the sometimes the mental support that we need from one another. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Omali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree,
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامشو گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره، همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. So we were saying that we need to give our brothers and sisters in faith the mental support. And sometimes this mental support manifests itself in different ways. Amongst the ways that manifests itself is that I need my believing brother or sister to come to me and say to me, look, you know what? You have this and this wrong. You should fix it. This is some support that I need. Amir al-Mu'mineen and even Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, they say, أَحَبُّ أُخْوَانِ إِلَيْهِ, the most beloved of my brothers and sisters to me. Brothers and sisters in faith, obviously. مَنْ أَهْدَى إِلَيَّ عَيُوبِ, he who gifts me my faults. So a person comes to me and says to me, this is something that you say is not right. This is something that you do is not right. Maybe you should change it. So any faults in me that someone points out is actually a support. It's actually a help from that believer to me. And I should accept that with an open mind and open heart. I shouldn't say to him, well, no, how dare you say this to me? And a lot of us do this when we hear people saying things about us. And out of concern, of course, we take offense to it. Why should you take offense to it? If you think that you've done something wrong, sit down, listen, because this will help you, protect you, make you a better person. You know, I see one of my brothers in faith doing something wrong and I come and tell him. It's not because I hate him, just because I want to make him feel and look bad. Rather, I want to make him look good because he is a concern to me. So the Imam says, the most beloved of my friends, my brothers and sisters, are the ones who gift me my mistakes. Even, for example, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they talk about when it comes to our brothers in terms of mental support, that sometimes we need to stay away from their enemies, not to take them as friends. And this is something that sometimes we do. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, do not take the enemy of your enemy as a friend, and in return what seems to happen is that your friend will become your enemy. And he will say to you, well, if this guy is your friend, then I'm not going to be your friend. And he also said, salamullahi alayhi, as duqa'aka thalath, your friends are three. وَأَعْدَاؤُكَ ثَلَاثٌ, and also your enemies are three. As for your friends, your friend and your friend's friend. وَعَدُوُّ عَدُوُّكَ, and the enemy of your enemy. So these are three of your friends. Your friend, his friends, and the enemy of your enemy is also your friend. وَأَعْدَاؤُكَ, as for your enemies, عَدُوُّكَ, your enemy, number one. وَعَدُوُّ صَدِيقُكَ, the enemy of your friend. And three, وَصَدِيقُ عَدُوِكَ, and the friend of your enemy is also your enemy. So, in terms of giving our friends and our brothers and sisters in faith the mental support they need, we cannot limit it to one thing. So, for example, when it comes to us helping them in any shape, way, or form, we have to do that. In terms of giving them, for example, the adequate advice, also we are required to do so. When it comes to even supporting them in not being enemies of their enemies, this is something that we also need to do. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.
Dozens of Palestinians are killed in fresh Israeli airstrikes in Gaza, pushing the overall death toll from the aggression to more than 31,340. An aid boat set sail from Cyprus is gradually heading toward the Gaza Strip, with growing calls for further humanitarian assistance to the besieged territory. Also in the headlines, Russia and Ukraine launch a new wave of drone strikes against each other, with both sides reporting casualties and damage to the buildings.